You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some Royals baseball. We bring on, as we are fortunate to have, and we appreciate the time, with Royals manager Mike Matheny. He joins us here on our T-Mobile guest line. Coverage and speed, that's real 5G. T-Mobile covers more of America with 5G speeds. Mike, thanks for the time. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Seren.
Let's talk a little bit. I want to just get kind of the news of the day. And look, I know there's going to be, you know, I'm not going to ask you to comment about what's going on in Seattle, but that's been kind of the biggest baseball news, the changing of the guard, the firing of the president of the Seattle Mariners, and talking about, service time manipulation. Buster Olney was on the station, and he made a very, I would say passionate statement that Royals fans can hold their heads high because that does not go on with the Royals organization. The best players are always here. When a guy's ready, they're always here. That service time game's a tricky one. Why, Brady Singer's the guy that I would point to and say, would it have been better to maybe not have him up, right? He was clearly ready, but you could steal an extra year, and I'll use the term steal or gain, however you want to be described. That's obviously not the philosophy of this organization. Why? Why is it better the way you guys do it? Why do you do it the way you do it?
Well, it really comes down, I believe you know this, Ren. It comes down to Dayton Moore and the commitment that he makes to these players. But there's also, it's a fine line. I mean, they're real dollars that start working against a club over the long haul of a career, whether it's into arbitration years or into free agency years. But Dayton has made a very clear statement to these guys that two things have to happen, really. One, you need to be ready, and two, the opportunities present itself. And that opportunity to present itself is really the area where it's a sticking point. And the sticking point being that a lot of people just wait until they've got that really clear role. And I think it's smart to not have a guy come up until you're going to get him the consistent work, especially if you're talking about an impact player or an everyday guy. There are times when you'll bring a player up in a backup role and they kind of get their feet wet. But a lot of these young players, I think it's smart that we sit and we wait until the timing's right, that our team really needs them and they've shown that they're ready and an opportunity has presented itself.
On the pitching side of things, Mike, you guys seem to have great competition. You've added some veterans and Mike Minor into a lesser deal, Irvin Santana, guys that are there that have been there and done that. When you've got all these great young arms, some people would say, hey, what are you doing? You're blocking these guys. I use the word competition because I know that's the mindset, right? Don't just hand somebody a job, make them earn the job. And I also love the idea that Mike Minor has been very effective out of the bullpen. Let's start with Mike Minor. Why, when you have so much pitching, and I stole some of the thunder there as to what it is, but why was he the right guy to bring into this mix when there's so many talented arms in the organization?
Well, I think what you're looking for is understanding this season's going to have its unique challenges with the way things played out last year. And we're coming out of the gate, and we've been very clear. We're going to have guys prepared. We don't want anybody necessarily thinking about being cut back at any time. But, we're going to have to keep a close eye as you have young pitching that's already here, let alone the ones that didn't even get to really pitch last year except in our secondary site situation. So it's going to take a deep – a very deep roster. It's going to take a pitching staff that has a number of different people that can come in and be a part of that. But we are going to need to see some consistency from a few guys who've been there and done that before. And that's something I believe Mike Minor's done well. This is a guy that we know can pitch deep into games and knows what it feels like to throw a lot of innings. And so it is going to be something we'll have our eye on. We don't necessarily want that workload being at the forefront of the mind, especially with some of these young pitchers. We're not limiting them right out of the gate. Let's get ready. Let's get to the point where you're ready to come out of the gate in April as good as you can possibly be, and then trust us that we'll do what's right for you over the long haul. But with that, we'll take advantage of days that we can get. However, we can get extra rest for any of the players that look like they need it or we know we'll need it. We'll take them. But there's going to be some horses that are going to have to pull some of the weight for us throughout the long haul of the year.
Royals manager Mike Matheny is with us here in the program. 10 years ago or so, there were a number of different studies done by analytics guys about a 20 or 30%, I forget which it is. Like, you don't want to jump a guy's innings more than 20 or 30%. And that's, some of the rules. We saw that with Steven Strasburg, right, when the Nationals shut him down that year. I don't know if they were adhering to that 20 or 30%, but they had a number in mind, and they said, okay, that's it. We're going to shut him down. You guys have got so many great young arms. And last year being such something completely out of everyone's control, where you couldn't keep that innings total moving forward. How do you balance that? I mean, that's a really difficult question. I say that, and then I'll say, on the other hand, I also have read books where they say, some of the old-time guys back in the 40s and 50s that pitched well into their late 30s, the analytics guys will attribute it to, well, they went and served in the war for a year or two, and their arm got a break. And that's why they were able to pitch later into their career. So how do you possibly – what was last year as far as arm longevity a positive or a negative?
I think it was a positive in so many different ways. First of all, getting some of those young pitchers, as you look at how Brady handled it and how Chris handled it was a different environment. And it was a good place for them to be kind of initiated into the game. It was – a situation for, I think, any young player, as good as it could be, to get your feet wet in the league. The thing that isn't really being given enough credit is the work that these players did, whether it's the guys at the secondary site. I mean, every live, every bullpen, every long toss, we have all of that documented extremely well. And really, a lot of those innings that guys aren't getting credit for, they were doing, whether that was in quarantine. They were, while we were quarantined, they were still out pitching against hitters, and they were doing things outside that were replicating some of those innings. So just because they didn't happen on an official field with an official scorekeeper to put them in official books doesn't mean that they didn't happen. And so they got the repetitions that they need. There's a number that's out there that we have internally that probably a look different than maybe what is out there officially, but we know that we're going to make every effort, and we're going to take everything that we're seeing from sports science, and we believe deeply in how we can understand the kinetic chain and where there are some weaknesses that pop up by how we are constantly monitoring, measuring how their body's responding. That'll let us know if they're precursors to potentially something going wrong. So we want them to have long careers. We want them to have healthy careers. But we also just don't want to throw them on the shelf because there's some sort of projection out there or some expectation that really doesn't tell the whole story with the exact numbers.
Should Royals fans expect to see a six-man rotation, an opener, a lot of unique things when it comes to maybe balancing those innings out for the rotation?
Yeah, I don't think those are bad ideas, and we're going to be open to everything, especially if we have a number of guys throwing well, if it's at that spot where, we should probably get this guy a little bit more rest. But once again, it could be a modified situation, too, where you have a couple guys that are just going to take the ball every fifth day, and then you bounce some guys and give them extra rest, or you might skip them, or you do put six guys in when it's a long stretch of games without any off days. I think those are all really good options. If somebody's needing some help or if it doesn't match up well, we've proven that we will throw a pitcher that we believe gives us the best chance in any particular inning. And the first inning, and trying to get the guys to buy in and just trust us that we're trying to do what's best for the team. And here's our why. And if we give them a good why, whether it's the drills that we're doing in spring training or it's the roles or lack of roles in that bullpen, if they know that we've got purpose behind what we're doing and then that it's for the good of the club, and we can explain it to them, we've been getting really good buy-in. So somebody throwing the first inning that could roll into the second and then put a typical starter on the back end or on the backside of that to come in the third, that's something our guys have seen some effectiveness to, and there's a good why behind it. And if it can help us get to where we want to be at the end of the season, I think they're all going to buy in.
We're talking to Mike Matheny here in the program. Is this where's this depth of pitching, right? There's still, I know you don't have, a Cy Young winner, guys with maybe some of the, for lack of a better term, pelts on the wall. But you've got a lot of talent, obviously, and depth of talent. The overall depth of pitching. I mean, this seems like you've created that ultimate competition where if you're not good, you got somebody else to somewhere else to go. Is this as deep as it's been for you as a manager as far as pitching?
Yeah, sir, and it's and we're hearing guys too from other organizations that are jumping in the box and facing some of these live pitchers, and they're like, "Where are you getting these guys?" So it's a great testament to the organization, to our scouts who are going out and doing a lot of work, to our player development. And I want to go back to that point too. I want to tell you this, and this is watching from a year ago where some of these guys were. Many of them have only played a little bit in the minor leagues, and watching them come in early, all these big arms that we had talked about, and watched where they were. And then you had this season that most people are going to say was this lost season. And unfortunately, it really was for a lot of the minor league guys who weren't able to be at our secondary site. But I want to tell you, I can't believe the improvement in a year's time from a number of those young players who didn't play one official minor league game, but how they took advantage of that time in quarantine and at that secondary site. And the strides and the improvement that they've made. And it's a large group. When I was there then in October, what we called was our postseason camp, it was day after day of guys with big stuff that had a presence and a consistency that was really beyond what their experience would lend it to be. And it was fun to watch, and it's continuing to be that way. We're watching good stuff come out of that bullpen every single day as we're getting ready to start our spring training games. And as we're starting to maybe put together what that roster might look like, at least kind of through some of our competition, starting with Texas, we've got some guys coming out with some stuff. So they're developing, but what we've done is I believe we've made some really good selections through the draft and through free agency of not just the kind of stuff that you want to see, but the consistency. And there's also another outside point there too, man. We got some guys that just want to compete and are going about it the right way, like a bunch of pros, even for being young guys.
Amongst the position players, do you have that the kind of competition you want, or is that still maybe a little bit away?
No, I would say, you know, developmentally, and I think it would be pretty well noted. We're getting a lot of attention when you look at our system. How many people would agree that we have a number of arms that are close and that could be contributors? And we do have some position players. I would say that they might be a little bit further behind as far as timing would go. But it would be interesting to watch. You know, a couple of them we've had peaks at, but that group too, you know, you're talking about whether it's the Prado, Melendez, Rivera, the Emmanuel Rivera and Gutierrez, all of that group, watching what a couple of them did in winter ball, big winter ball years, as well as just some of the development you want to see physically. Not to mention Bobby Witt Jr. is continually to progress. You're starting to see him get into some of that strength that you thought would be there. There's some special players that are on the way, but you know, the first thing that someone would say is that, you know, they haven't played above a lower level. I would argue that again. You look at what we were able to do last year with that secondary site, and that was at times AAA. We were sending guys down from the major leagues that were down there competing against these players. It was for what could have been a really bad situation, they absolutely made the most of it. And once again, I'm grateful to our development staff for keeping so diligent at the energy level and putting you're talking about that competition. These guys were in there competing every single day, even though they're over at the T-Bone Stadium. They were preparing in a way that they felt they'd get a call any day to come help us out.
Mike, and I'm sorry, I think you cut out just there for a second, though. We still got you, right?
I'm here.
Okay, yeah, I just want to make sure. We're talking to Mike Matheny here in the program. Carlos Santana and Andrew Benintendi, both guys that give you professional at-bats, certainly elongate that lineup. How much of their impact is just their numbers, and how much is what they're going to do to wear down the opposing pitcher?
Yeah, it's pretty fun to think about, just facing Carlos a lot and realizing every time he walked in there, even if you got him out, it might cost you 10 pitches to get him out. And Andrew's got that same ability. And it's great when you can talk about an approach that you want to see as far as the ideology of your offense or the language of that offense. And we talked since October. Dayton was clear. And we put a plan together. We don't need to be those just fighting at bats where you're going to dig in and you're going to grind. And then to go out and make a step like we made, and to go after a Carlos Santana who's going to set that template. And this guy has been off the charts good here this spring, and not just with how he's talking about his approach, but he is just – he can't help it. He's a multiplier. He's walking into the cage and bringing guys over like, hey, tell me about your two-strike approach. And it doesn't matter if it's a Latin player, a young guy, a guy who's just only been an A-ball. He's just out talking and teaching. And you can feel that it's becoming infectious. And, you know, you can put a couple of those at-bats together. You throw Witt in there as well, and we know when Witt can kind of at-bat that he can put together. And if that's the way the lineup worked out, there's potential you could get three outs, and it costs you 30 pitches. So it's a kind of grinding style that we're talking about, and the guys below them we know can do a lot of damage, and they all look pretty locked in right now too.
You like the options you have in the batting order? I mean, do you think, you know, it certainly looks like you've got seven guys that have all been there and done that. Maybe, I know people, you know, Andrew Benintendi was hurt last year, but, you know, he's had some really productive years. Carlos Santana's batting average wasn't great. His on-base was fantastic, led the league in walks. So everybody has a little bit of a question mark, but do you feel like this lineup really took a big step forward with the depth that you have now?
Well, I think you're seeing, like with Benintendi, you're seeing a young player who's had considerable success and had a dry run there for like all players do. It just happened to happen, you know, through that shortened season last year and coming off the heels of 19. But you've seen enough to know, and you've got the data to support the kind of hitter that he could be. And I know he's excited to jump in here and have a new life, but you can't deny some of the things that he does well. When you start seeing things that typically there's some good predictors to, and one of those is strike zone awareness and the ability to get on base, which once again comes down to Santana as well. But you start playing with those different lineups, and you watch Mondy v. Mondy, how we watched him when he hit his stride last year, and I'm going to tell you, he looks very similar right now. Now, keeping the pace that he did last year at the end, I don't know if any human's ever done that before for an 162, but just to see that talent is in there and try to help him figure out that consistency drives so much more depth into what that lineup could look like. But I'm really happy with what I'm seeing, adjustments from Nicky Lopez. He's shortening up, trying to use the whole field, not trying to get big, figuring out how to get on base. That's something we've known that he's been able to do all the way through the minor leagues also. And then you add in the wild card with Michael Taylor, and the display he put on yesterday on live BP, hitting ball out to center field, then coming in afterwards and just watching his work and his hand speed. I think you're going to see a diamond in the rough right there. So there's a bunch of different pieces that obviously, you know, you can talk about guys having some down years. You're going to have those. But talent is talent. And when you start matching up the potential of what this group can do, I put that lineup against anybody.
Last question before I get you to my final four, Mike. We're talking to Royals manager Mike Matheny here in the program. The new minor leagues. I'm pretty sure that Dayton, when I get a chance to talk with him, this wasn't his choice. I think if Dayton had his choice, he'd have about 40 minor league teams. I read the book Scouts Honor way back in the day, where Dayton is figures prominently in the book from his days in Atlanta, and it details all the guys that you know were not considered to be a prospect by any stretch of the imagination, that you know they built into and helped develop into being productive players. Less minor league teams. Like I said, the passion that Dayton has for any and all players in the game and the willingness to overturn any stone to find talent, does this hurt you guys more than other teams that maybe weren't as dedicated to trying to develop anyone and everyone?
Yeah, I think just it hurts the game in general. and I do think that the Kansas City Royals have done a really nice job of giving a lot of different players an opportunity and celebrating the stories when you do find one of those, we talked about, a diamond in the rough, when you can find a player that shows some of the skill set, and then with just heart and soul and determination, figure out a way to prove a lot of people wrong. And then, you know, just how the draft has changed, where players who've made impacts on major league teams would have never even had a shot in today's game. And so, you know, it's just such a special thing. And we make sure we make a big deal of it here in major league camp that, you know, to get here, you've beaten so many odds. And just to make sure that these guys get the opportunity to celebrate how special it is to put on this uniform. But the exact same thing could be said in our minor league system, and it's just a shame that there's less kids that are deserving, the kind of players that would just it could change the trajectory of their life to give them an opportunity to get out here and compete. But then you just never know when you get the right instructor, you know, when the teacher is there to make that difference. You put them in the hands of a Rusty Cones, and you watch somebody blossom. You just never know when you can turn a career into something that nobody would have given a chance to. So I hurt for them. I know a number of kids that I'd love to have seen got a shot and just blown away that they didn't get the opportunity, and it's a shame. Plus, I love minor league baseball. I think it's entertaining, and you can go to some of these cities and how the cities embrace it. And I understand the point of why, but unfortunately, I think there's a whole lot of lives, and I think there's a whole lot of communities that are going to be negatively impacted by not having those teams.
Our Final Four is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. The same experts that care for the Royals can see you right now. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Mike, I will start you with this. When you go to a ball game, you mentioned minor league baseball, wherever it might be, you grab a hot dog. What are you putting on it?
Just ketchup.
Yeah. Okay. Good. A ketchup guy. I'm a ketchup guy. Yeah. I like a lot of things on it, but it starts with ketchup. It's always nice to hear. Some people are offended by ketchup on a hot dog. I don't get it. Ketchup's wonderful. Are you for or against the universal DH?
I'm for it, only because I get so nervous watching our pitchers walk in there. I've seen too many injuries happen. First of all, you don't like what it looks like in the end, but mine's truly about injury, is how can we minimize some of the risk. I've watched pitchers blow something out trying to run bases. I mean, it sounds crazy, but they're just so valuable to us. How can we lessen the risk of getting them hurt?
I agree. Best pitch you ever caught. By that I mean not like one pitch, but like so-and-so's curveball, so-and-so's fastball, so-and-so's slider that you personally caught. What was the best pitch you ever caught?
Yeah, the best pitch I ever caught, I actually missed. So I was catching against the Rays, we had a young fireballer. His name was Billy Koch, and this was when I was with the Blue Jays, and I'd never even seen him. He wasn't with us in spring training. I was on base, which was a miracle, but I didn't get a chance to warm him up in between. And so I go out, and, I mean, it's the first pitch is coming. I'd never seen a ball out of this guy's hand, and Jose Canseco was in the box. And so I call a fastball, and I expect a fastball, and next thing I know, ball goes flying past Canseco, who swung and missed. I didn't even get leather on the ball, and went right between the umpire's legs. And it registered on the clock at 101. And it sank the width of the plate. And so I get another ball from the umpire, who looks scared to death, and throw it back to the pitcher. And Canseco looked back at me and says, "Dude, I got no chance." And I wasn't sure I had much of a chance of slowing it down either. But that was one of the nastiest pitches. It was a kid with a great arm who just had all that pent-up excitement about letting it eat his very first pitch, and nobody touched it.
You were literally Crash Davis. I don't know where it's going, right? I love that line. That's great. All right, and finally, best guest, how many COVID tests have you had?
That's easy. We can go back and track it. It's every other day that every other day that I've been in a Royals uniform, I've had a COVID test. So looking forward to those days being behind us. We're getting some good news out here lately. It sounds like that we're going to have some good number of fans in the stands when we get to Kauffman. And looking forward for our world when we can put some of these tests behind. But until then, I'm making sure the guys, we just keep talking about, you know what, embrace it. Whatever we got to do to be on the field right now and stay on the field and lessen the risk of people getting sick and Then we can move past this someday, and I'm hoping that someday is really soon.
Mike, we know it hasn't been easy for you guys, and Whit Merrifield gave us a little bit of a snapshot of what you guys went through and what you're probably going to be going through, at least to start the season. And I will tell you, we really appreciate it, man. We need a release. Everybody's having a tough year plus, soon to be year plus. Having some baseball to watch every night makes it a lot better. So we do appreciate everything you and the guys are going through. I mean, immensely. We appreciate it. It is a great release to have, and we're certainly very excited about where this team is going. So thanks so much for spending some time with us. Enjoy your time there in the Arizona warmth, and we'll see you back in KC.
Thanks, Ren. Can't wait. We're going to put a good product out for you guys this year.
I believe it. I believe it. Mike Matheny, Royals manager, with us here in the program. We will take a break, come back, give you the things you need to know.
The program with Soren Petro.
I got the best hair in the room. Again, if you're sitting with Frank Bull and Pete Enick, hey, who cares?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you
need to know. But first, it's Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. What team won the last Super Bowl shown on ABC? I'll give you a hint if you heard the story earlier. Said it was the first time since 2006.
2006.
Mm-hmm.
So was it the sixth Super Bowl or the sixth season? Let's see how good I am at remembering where things were. Hang on. Give me a second here. 02, the 02 season was the Bucks over the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
03, Pats. 04 Pats, 05 was, who snuck in there in 05? No, wait. 02.
You had it right.
Hold on. No. Yeah, 03 Pats, 04 Pats, 05. What am I forgetting? Steelers?
Mm-hmm.
But the 06 season then would have been, what am I missing here? Why am I not computing this? When the 08 was Aaron Rodgers Packers, right?
10 was
Is it
Packers.
The January 0, just tell me this, is it the January 06 Super Bowl?
Yes.
Okay, so then it's what I just said.
Yeah.
What did I say? 05
yep.
Steelers.
Yep. Steelers over Seahawks. The Seahawks in Super Bowl 40, last one televised on ABC.
Nice. By the way, and if you didn't hear our segment before, Mike Matheny, we were talking about the new deal. ESPN has re-upped on Monday Night Football, a 30% increase, $2.6 billion. B as in billion.
Billion.
And then all their, highlights packages. I would have thought that they would have made a play for Sunday Night Football. Like, that's the crown jewel right now, right?
Yep. Oh, no question.
It's one game. But NBC pays as much for that one game as they're going to be paying $2 billion as CBS and Fox pay for all their games on the noon and 3 o'clock slots.
Yeah, that one game, though, they get so much lead-in with Football Night in America and everything, in spite of the fact that Tony Dungy's on that show and he's not very good. But, I mean, the exposure that they get going into – he's not very good.
I
don't think I'm splitting an atom here.
100%. I 100% agree.
I'm not disagreeing.
Listen, at some point we have to get away from, like, if a guy's a swell guy, he's good at his job.
Right.
A guy can be a swell guy and suck at his job. A guy can be a Richard and be great at his job.
See me.
Fact. See me. Just ask my wife. She'll tell you. Not a swell guy.
See what most of this city thinks of Joe Buck.
Right? I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Like, it's like Tony Dungy's a great guy. He sucks on Sunday Night Football.
He is not a compelling
character.
Glad
you said it, Jed. I'm empowered. He sucks. He's not like, he's all right. He's not all right. He sucks. He's been on there for what, 6 years, 8 years? And he immediately stammers the moment they come to him. And then he says virtually nothing.
Is he a better broadcaster than Jeff Garcia is a good-looking guy? I think he's better.
Oh, wow. We didn't need to open that can of worms.
I think he's better broadcaster than Garcia.
No, I disagree. I don't think you've seen. I've sat in front of Jeff Garcia and interviewed him. Jeff Garcia is definitively a much better-looking guy than Tony Dungy is a quality broadcaster. 100%. If you'd say, Jeff Garcia is not a bad, he's not that bad a looking guy. He's not, I'm fine. He's not a model.
Yeah.
He's kind of a unique guy. He's like, there's some Spanish heritage and he's got red hair. You know, he's kind of Canelo Alvarez, you know, mm-hmm. But no, like I will say this, when you see him in person, he's one of those guys that was like probably super skinny as a kid. And then he filled out later in life and he works out. So now he has like the perfect physique.
Right.
He's 40, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And he's got this like, you know, 21 inch waist. And then he's very he's like got the right amount of muscle without being like, you know, the freaky bulky bodybuilder.
Yep.
Like, which if you want to be a bodybuilder, I'd love to be a bodybuilder. I didn't try to be a bodybuilder, but I tried to get big, you know, when I was in my 20s. And so I would lift heavy and do all that. What a train wreck that was. But anyway, I would love to be that guy that, like, The Rock. The Rock is a big bodybuilder-looking guy. Jeff Garcia is, like, movie star body, right? He's like who's the guy who plays Deadpool?
Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Reynolds, Tom Cruise, you know, when they're not enhancing the Captain America guy. You know, like, because clearly I look at that, I'm like, dude, no one's back looks like that. Stop. And, you know, so they enhance his.
Yeah, I'm seeing a shot of him from Super Bowl 53, and he's jacked.
I think we've taken this Jeff Garcia body about as far as we can.
Well, Curtis has made Jeff Garcia's whipping boy. It's like Curtis is like, I found a guy who's uglier than me. I'm going to kick the crap out of this guy. Right? Like, and I'm all for it because I'm not a good looking guy. So I'm ready to, like, let's talk some smack on somebody. I'm just telling you, when you see Jeff Garcia in person, like, I've rolled with the punches on the jokes. I actually don't think he's a bad looking guy. And I'm going to tell you, physique wise, every, you know, he walks into the room, every gal turns her head and's like, oh yeah, sure. Who's that?
The picture I'm looking at, I don't doubt it.
Yeah. So there you go, Curtis. Maybe you and I should aspire to be more Jeff Garcia-esque.
What's funny is I'm no better looking than he is, and he's in much better shape. I need to cast stones at somebody. Nobody around here I can do it to.
There are plenty out there to take shots at, but we're above that. We don't take shots.
Yes, of course.
We don't take shots.
Of course not.
First of all, my thanks to Mike Matheny. Mike Swanson, who helped us get that set up, the Royals organization. You know, I know, listen, one of the reasons why I love the Royals organization is I will do a topic that is, did they do it right? And I personally disagree with how they did it. And I will go talk to Dayton Moore. And you know what the first thing Dayton Moore will say to me?
Hmm.
How are your girls? How are they doing? Is everybody good in your house? I mean,
yep.
Like, it's not just that he gives a crap about your family, and he remembers that I have two girls.
That's the thing. Not how are the kids.
No, how are your girls?
Specifically, I've heard him
say. Yeah, he knows specifically that I have two daughters. I love Dayton Moore. I really do. As a guy to cover, you cannot ask for better for these reasons. And I think Mike Matheny's cut from the same cloth. Yep. And I love Ned Yost. Ned Yost was great to cover as well. But, you know, like, there will never be a time that I cross paths with Ned Yost again. I'll be shocked. It'll be an upset if it happens because Ned's going to go do his thing back where he's from. Dayton Moore's always going to be around Kansas City. I believe that Kansas City is part of his soul now.
Yep.
And you'll cross paths, and Dayton Moore will come up. And it doesn't make Ned a bad guy. I want to be clear because I can't remember. I'm Ned Yost in this equation. I can't remember if you got two kids or three. You got a boy and two girls. You got two girls. You got two boys, right? Like, Dayton Moore can or makes it a point to know, and it's special. It means something to me. It always has,
yep.
Right? We had Chuck Powell on today from KJR. He used to work in Phoenix, and when I'd be at spring training, he'd come out, and we'd get together one night always in Phoenix. And one time he came out, he had a all-access pass to all his spring training, and so he came out and came out while we were still doing the show. It was like me and Doug. And Chuck comes out to hang out with us, and we were going to go to dinner, and we were interviewing Dayton. And we get done, and it's end of the day. Like, I'm going to say it's like 5 o'clock is back when we were on 10 to 2, and it's like 5. And so it's 6 at home, and Dayton's done, and he stands up, and I'm like, hey, Dayton, introduce you to my friend Chuck, and he works here in Phoenix, and he's like, oh, how you doing? And I said, you know, Chuck played baseball. He actually played with Jason Isringhausen in high school. And he's like, oh, really? And so he just struck up a conversation with him about, like, yeah, Isringhausen, I remember this. We looked at him at this and kind of some of his scouting stories and everything, and just sat and talked baseball with a complete stranger.
Yeah.
Just off the fact that, one, he was my friend, so that, like, oh, there's some respect for this guy, so I respect this guy. And then, oh, you have a passion for the game of baseball? I said, big baseball guy. And, like, there, here was a guy that had passion for the game of baseball, and he just sat and talked baseball with Chuck. And
we've all known people in similar positions who would not have done that.
No. And literally, like, we left, and Chuck goes, you know, that was one of the best baseball conversations I've ever had. And I was also kind of wondering, are we going to get to dinner or not? Right? Like, he goes, I was fine if we didn't get to dinner because I was enjoying. I'm not saying that he was like, is this guy going to quit talking about your arm? He goes,
right.
He loved the conversation, but he goes, I can't believe this guy's sitting here talking to me this long.
Yeah.
You know? And so here it was, like, Dayton Moore, general manager of a baseball team, and he takes the time to talk to a bunch of media humps at the end of the day, where I'm sure he'd either love to get back to his work or love to get home and have some dinner himself, and he was just sitting there talking baseball. Nobody has – I will tell you that I have never met anyone in my life that has more passion for baseball and what baseball can mean for people than Dayton Moore.
And you hear it every time he talks about it.
Yeah. So I want to be clear. When I question Dayton Moore, I question Dayton Moore because, number one, I know the man can take it. Right, I talk about that a lot. Like, I give Curtis grief. I know Curtis can take it.
Right.
You know, I hope Curtis gives me grief. He knows I can take it.
Right.
Dayton Moore is a man. Dayton Moore is a father. Dayton Moore is a manager. Dayton Moore is a philanthropist. Dayton Moore is a human being. You know, he embodies all those qualities. And what I love is I'm able to do the radio show I want and talk passionately about baseball and question everything that goes on in baseball, because questions are good. Questions are how you learn. Questions are how you get better. And I know Dayton Moore's questioning in his own meetings, and his people are questioning, and he welcomes that. And I know that I can do that and talk baseball, and Dayton Moore's like, you know what? This guy's talking baseball. He's talking Royals baseball. It doesn't matter if he's saying everything we did is right. He's talking Royals baseball. He is fanning the flames of the passion of Royals baseball, and we will talk to that guy whenever we can. And I appreciate that. It's Mike Matheny. Trust me, you could hear there was a lot going on around Mike Matheny, right?
I'm going to tell you, multitasking.
There was this little window, and you could hear clearly some reports or something were being set in front of him, or he was moving from one room to another, and he answered every question. You know, like, I love being out there, and I miss being out there. It sucks. Because when you're out there and you sit down with him, he carves out the time, and nobody, when you're face-to-face, can set something in front of him. Clearly, somebody was setting something in front of him.
Yeah.
Right? He got handed something. He was clearly, like, maybe even he was in, like, the coach's room and was getting ready to, you know, start talking about what we see today, who looked like what. And he was doing this interview because it was cramming it in. When I'm out there, you have no choice but to, okay, we're sitting down with this guy. My whole focus is there. Not that he didn't give us our whole focus. I think he did. But you could hear the rustling going on.
Mm-hmm.
That they are burning all the hours with the Royals. If they're not good during the Mike Matheny, Dayton Moore marriage, it isn't because they didn't try.
No.
Right? There is no lack of want to for that group. And so, listen, I get all my Royals gear. I love the Royals. And I do love where this organization is. And I will tell you, because of the quality of human being that Dayton Moore is, there is not a bigger Dayton Moore fan out there. My job requires me to question him sometimes. Because I had somebody who goes, well, I guess you don't like Dayton Moore if you're saying he shouldn't have had Brady Singer up the whole time. Not true. And I'm all ears. And when we talk to Dayton Moore, I'm going to say, listen, explain to me why you don't bury Brady Singer for 6-7 days and buy another year with him. Why was that important? And he'll give us his reason. And I either will or won't agree with it. I will definitely respect it because you're talking about a World Series winning manager. Mm-hmm. I will absolutely respect it, but I may not agree with it. But you know what? I know the guy across from me knows that my heart's at least in the right place, and I'm a passionate baseball guy, and he's man enough to be like, hey, the guy disagrees with me. I'm not going to, like, not go on with him. I'm not going to get all pissy, and, you know, he knows what he wants to do. He's open to it. He said, yeah, there are some things I'd do differently. You know, he's talked about that kind of thing. And anyone who says that they haven't learned from a mistake is a liar or a fool. And Dayton Moore is neither.
Yeah.
Same with Mike Matheny.
Yep.
Same with Mike Matheny.
Complete, thoughtful answers.
Yeah. I also like that everyone I'm ever coming in contact to that works around them or deals with them has nothing but positive things to say. That's not a bad thing, folks. You know, treating people with respect and kindness and humility, that ain't a bad thing. Not at all. Not in any way, shape, or form. All right, not where I thought we were going to go with need to know, but I still think you need to know it. You can feel really good. I'll say this. The Utah Jazz, you know, there's the thing that goes on in the NBA where they mess around, make guys hurt, put them on the IR, basically just to buy a roster spot. I remember, was it, who was the owner of the Jazz back in the day? Heavy set guy, owned car dealerships all over the West.
Yeah, damn it. I can't remember.
Frank Layden?
He was a coach.
Yeah, that's not it. Anyway, whatever his name was, he would never abuse the rule, even though everybody else did it. He said, if we win a championship, it'll be the greatest success ever because we never abuse the rules. This is during the mailman and John Stockton days.
Larry
Miller. I always respected that. Thank you, Larry Miller. And if you go to Surprise on your way from Peoria out to Surprise, you'll see Larry Miller dealership still out there. You know, I always respected that. Dayton Moore is the ultimate because I think he has a moral compass. He follows his moral compass, and he's won a World Series. That's pretty freaking cool. Two pennants and a World Series. Let's hope he does it again. We'll take a break, come back, give you the kicker. I'm going to talk a little bit about what your year of 21 is looking like. Listen, there's one simple way to know what your 21 is going to be like, right? All you got to do is listen to us. When we come back, you'll know. Next.
The program with Soren Petro.
He has the body of Adonis, but the eating habits of Homer Simpson.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
All right, how's your 2021 going to go? By the way, the kicker brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Joe Spiker and his team are absolutely the best. Find them online at eastonroofing.com. That's eastonroofing.com, commercial and residential. Easton Roofing, the best. Danny, we didn't have Danny today. Well, I'm back next Friday. Proud sponsor of Danny Unleashed. Easton is the bomb. Thanks so much to all the guys at Easton for all the great work they did for me and my family. How's your 21 going to go? This thing going around the internet. If you go back to your birth date, right? Your birth date, what was the number one movie on your 21st birthday? Whatever that movie is, that's how your 21 is going to go. Right? So mm-hmm. There's some movies that, like, I'm not sure how it applies. Let's see how it applies to the three of us. Should I go first, last, second? What do you guys think?
You can go last. You go last.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go last. Who wants to go first then?
I'll go first because I'm the least important person on the show. The movie.
I don't know about that, Jed. I think you're actually fourth, but go ahead.
Thank you. Even less important than Craig Brenner. My movie was Man on Fire with Denzel Washington. So that means I'm just going to be a badass, taking names, kicking ass for
and
all
die though. You well, die.
Yeah. I mean, that's likely to happen in 2021.
Man on Fire is one of my favorite. It's my favorite Denzel movie. That movie is awesome. If you don't cry during that movie, you're an ass. Curtis.
July 11th, 1987, Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise.
So that's a great thing for you. You're going to have a great year.
Yes, because I'm a nerd.
You fit that. You're a nerd. You'll be in paradise. We got to book Curtis a trip to like a tropical island, don't we?
Yep.
So mine would have been, what, 92, November 1st of 1992, Under Siege. And let me tell you something. How my day is gone, how my week is gone, 100%, this is a fact, people. Base your entire life on whatever the number one movie was on the date that you were 21 years old, because I'm telling you, it is a 100% profit. I am under siege in 21. It's happening now. I hope you get a really good movie.
Jed Marshall.
Back to the drawing board.
Curtis Siebold.
Let me ask you the question.
Soren Petro.
Talking about practice. Not a game, not a game, not a game. We're talking about practice.